This is the Music Halls of Fame podcast. This week, we honor the year in music for 2007, along with a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2007. We also discuss if there's an unofficial morals clause for entry into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Plus, our spotlight Hall of Fame and Museum is the Grammy Hall of Fame and Museum in Los Angeles, California. Before we get going with the podcast, like everyone tells you, please like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you'll know when these podcast episodes drop, which is usually every Thursday. Now, on to this week's episode. The year was 2007. The digital revolution finally managed to hit the music industry right where it hurts, in the pockets, as digital downloads went up, but album sales started to crater. The Live Earth concerts were held in 12 different stadiums on 7 continents. The concert for Diana, which honored the memory of British princess, Princess Diana, took place that year. Justin Bieber started out on his road to getting discovered when he started his YouTube channel. Soul music made a comeback with artists like Amy Winehouse fully embracing and paying homage to it. Radiohead released an album and then told people to pay whatever they wanted for it. Most people gave the band money for it instead of taking a free album. Prince gave away his album, Planet Earth, for free with the purchase of the British Daily Mail tabloid. Speaking of Prince, he also performed the halftime show at the Super Bowl that year, which is still considered to be the greatest Super Bowl halftime show performance of all time. Bands that started in 2007 included Bass Invaders, ASAP Mob, Mumford & Sons, Blood on the Dance Floor, Florence and the Machine, Haim, Cruella, Versailles, W&W, and Tame Impala. Chris Cornell left Audioslave that year. Other groups who broke up before their inevitable reunions or announced their hiatus included the aforementioned Audioslave after Chris left. Also Evanescence, Outkast, Train, Floaty, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, The Lords of the New Church, Body Rockers, Jurassic 5, Junior Mafia, Quiet Riot, New Order, and Genesis. Bands that reformed that year included Extreme, the Jesus and Mary Chain, Boyzone, the Blow Monkeys, Sixpence None the Richer, Soul to Soul, Squeeze, King Crimson, James, EMF, Eve 6, the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Oblivion, Van Halen with David Lee Roth back as lead singer, and N17. Bands that reformed in 2007 for either one tour or just simply one performance included The Police, The Spice Girls, and Led Zeppelin, with Jason Bonham taking over drumming duties that year for his late father, John Bonham. Jordan Sparks won American Idol. Speaking of American Idol, the best-selling album that year was American Idol alumni Chris Daughtry's first album. Also among the most popular albums and artists that year were Beyoncé, Kanye, Taylor Swift's debut album, Jay-Z's American Gangster, Linkin Park, another American Idol alumni, Carrie Underwood, Justin Timberlake, Gwen Stefani, Nickelback, the Hannah Montana soundtrack, and the High School Musical 2 soundtrack. Daughtry outsold all of those. Seriously. Such was the power of American Idol back in the day. Worldwide, though, Daughtry was no match for Avril Lavigne's album, The Best Damn Thing, which was the biggest-selling album of the year worldwide that year. The most critically acclaimed album of the year was Amy Winehouse's 2006 album, Back in Black, while her song Rehab was the most critically acclaimed song of the year. The top single of the year was Irreplaceable by Beyoncé. Other top singles were Rihanna and Jay-Z's Umbrella, Gwen Stefani and Akon's The Sweet Escape, Fergie with Big Girls Don't Cry, T-Pain and Young Jock with Buy You a Drink, Carrie Underwood with Before He Cheats, The Plain White Tees with Hey There Delilah, Akon and Snoop Dogg with I Wanna Love You, Nelly Furtado with Say It Right, Fergie and Ludacris with Glamorous, MIA's Paper Planes, and Akon with Don't Matter. In country music, singer Sammy Kershaw ran for Louisiana Lieutenant Governor that year. Rascal Flatts, Sugar Land, Brooks and Dunn, Montgomery Gentry, Big and Rich, and Emerson Drive were the biggest groups of the year. Top artists included Rodney Atkins, Kenny Chesney, Tim McGraw, Taylor Swift, Carrie Underwood, Brad Paisley, Billy Currington, Reba McEntire, Martina McBride, Alison Krauss, George Strait, Keith Urban, Kelly Pickler, and Luke Bryan. There were 25 singles that hit the top of the country music singles chart that year. Among them were Kenny Chesney's Beer in Mexico, also Never Wanted Nothing More, and also his song Don't Blink. To go along with that, you had Taylor Swift's Our Song, Garth Brooks's More Than a Memory, Tim McGraw's Last Dollar, Brad Paisley's Online, also his song Ticks, and also She's Everything. Rascal Flatts had Stand and also Take Me There. Big and Rich had Lost in This Moment. George Strait had It Just Comes Natural, and Carrie Underwood had So Small and Wasted. In hip-hop, the biggest albums were done by Kanye, 50 Cent, T.I., Jay-Z, Fabulous, Common, UGK, Lupe Fiasco, Young Buck, Redman, J. Dilla, LP, DJ Khaled, Cassidy, Jeezy, Fat Joe, Playa's Circle, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Dizzy Rascal, Sage Francis, Ghostface Killah, and Timberland. The top singles were Kanye's Stronger and also Good Life, Timberland's Give It to Me, 50 Cent and Justin Timberlake's AO Technology, Bone Thugs and Harmony's I Tried, Fabulous's Make Me Better, T.I.'s Big Things Poppin', Fat Joe's Make It Rain, Playa's Club, A Duffel Bag Boy, and Jeezy's Go Getta. In dance music, some of the biggest clubs on the party island of Ibiza were shut down by the cops for not doing a good enough job of getting the illegal drug trade out of their clubs. Some of the big albums included Justice's Cross album, Burial's Untrue, and Calvin Harris's I Invented Disco. Pop and R&B artists like Madonna, Justin Timberlake, Nelly Furtado, and Rihanna continued to dominate the dance charts. However, some EDM artists managed to break through, like Bob Sinclair, who, along with Big Ali and Dollar Man, scored a big club hit with Rock This Party. Eric Prydz's song Proper Education became the first remix of an original song to get onto Billboard's top dance airplay chart. That original song, by the way, was Another Brick in the Wall by Pink Floyd. Ralph Falcon's song I Need Someone was the biggest hit on the dance club play chart. Mindless Self-Indulgence also had a couple of major club hits, Straight to Video and Shut Me Up. September's Cry for You, David Guetta's Love Don't Let Me Go, Cascada's Every Time We Touch, and also Miracle. Eden's Put 'Em Up, Ida Kaur's Let Me Think About It, Chris Lake's Changes, Justice's D-A-N-C-E, along with songs by Basement Jaxx, Armin van Helden, Ferry Corsten, Axwell, Daft Punk, Proxy, ATB, The Chemical Brothers, Eric Prydz, Calvin Harris, and Sneaky Sound System were also big that year. The top 10 DJs on DJ Mag's Top 100 DJs poll were Armin van Buuren, Tiesto, John Digweed, Paul van Dyke, Sasha, Above and Beyond, Carl Cox, Ferry Corsten, Infected Mushroom, and David Guetta. The top Latin artists of the year included RBD, who had the top album, Aventura, who had the second top album, and also the top single, Daddy Yankee, Maná, Valentin Elizalde, Vicente Fernandez, Jennifer Lopez, Don Omar, Wisin y Yandel, Ricky Martin, Enrique Iglesias, and Hector El Father. Musicals that opened on Broadway included Legally Blonde, Curtains, the revival of 110 in the Shade. Musical films that were popular in 2007 included the remake of the 1988 movie Hairspray, along with Across the Universe, which remade music from the Beatles, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, which was based on the Broadway musical, and Once. The TV musical High School Musical 2 also came out in 2007, breaking TV ratings records for the Disney Channel, which broadcasted the musical. Artists who were born in 2007 included singer Lil Tay, singer Melody, and singer and rapper Aaliyah High. Artists who unfortunately passed away in 2007 include R&B pioneer Ike Turner, singer Dan Fogelberg, country music great Porter Wagoner, Billy Pinkney of the Drifters, Kevin DeBrow of Quiet Riot, jazz pianist Oscar Peterson, jazz saxophonist Michael Brecker, Mark St. John of the group Kiss, Brad Delp of the group Boston, Zola Taylor of the Platters, Hank Medress of the Tokens, George McCorkle of the Marshall Tucker Band, jazz musician Alice Coltrane, Denny Doherty of the Mamas and the Papas, singer Frankie Lane, Indonesian singer Chrissy, entertainer Kitty Carlisle, cellist Metislav Rostopovich, Izumi Sakai of the group Zard, Hawaiian entertainer Don Ho with Tiny Bubbles, Tony Thompson of High Five, Ian Wallace of King Crimson, Billy Henderson of the Spinners, Joe Hunter of Motown Records house band The Funk Brothers, Bam Bam Lane of Billy Haley and His Comets, Mexican singer Antonio Aguilar, reggae artist Lucky Doobie, entertainer and entrepreneur Merv Griffin, Paul Raven of Killing Joke, entertainer Robert Goulet, Carter Albrecht of Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians, Joe Zawinul of Weather Report, saxophonist Boots Randolph, opera singers Luciano Pavarotti, Beverly Sills, and Regine Crespin, singer Greth Kausland, composer Karl-Heinz Stockhausen, Macedonian singer Tose Proski, Polish musician Witold Kiltika, singer and actress Carol Bruce, singer-songwriter Lee Hazelwood, composer Giancarlo Menotti, and jazz percussionist Max Roach. In award ceremonies for the music of 2007, Kanye West was the most nominated at the Grammy Awards with 10. However, Amy Winehouse was the big winner of the night, winning 5 awards, including Record and Song of the Year for Rehab, to go along with Best New Artist, beating out Taylor Swift, actually, for Best New Artist. Because of visa problems getting into the United States because of prior legal problems in the UK, Amy was not allowed to enter the United States to attend the ceremony. Instead, she performed and accepted her awards via satellite back in England. Jazz great Herbie Hancock, by the way, won Album of the Year that year for River, the Joni Mitchell Letters. At the American Music Awards, Rihanna, Daughtry, Beyonce, and Carrie Underwood were the big winners. At the MTV Video Music Awards, Rihanna and Jay-Z won Video of the Year for Umbrella. The Police, Rihanna, Justin Timberlake, Daughtry, Gwen Stefani won the music categories at the People's Choice Awards. The Billboard Music Awards were not given out from 2007 to 2010. The Soul Train Music Awards were also canceled, but would return the next year. At the Eurovision Singing Contest, which was held in Finland that year, the country of Serbia won for the song Molotiva. Kenny Chesney won Entertainer of the Year at the Country Music Association Awards, and he also won the same award at the Academy of Country Music Awards. The Arctic Monkeys won Best British Album for Favorite Worst Nightmare and Take That won Best Song for Shine at the Brit Awards. Feist won Best Album for The Remainder, and they also won Best Song for 1, 2, 3, 4, and they also won Artist of the Year at the Juno Awards. Silverchair won Album of the Year for Young Modern, and they also won Single of the Year for Straight Lines at the ARIA Music Awards. At the Tony Awards, Spring Awakening won Best Musical and Company won Best Revival of a Musical. Musically, at the Academy Awards, Glenn Hansard and Marketa Irglova won Best Original Film Song for Falling Slowly from the movie Once, and Dario Marianelli won Best Original Film Score for the movie Atonement. The Pulitzer Prize in Music went to Ornette Coleman for Sound Grammar. The Canadian Polaris Prize went to Patrick Watson for his album Close to Paradise. George Shearing was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II. Evelyn Glennie was made a dame, while Rod Stewart, John Rutter, and Imogen Cooper were among those given the Order of British Empire Awards by the Queen. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony was held on March 12th at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. During the ceremony, only Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony from Van Halen went to the ceremony to be inducted as a group, despite the fact that they had both been kicked out of the band at that point. The rest of the group did not bother to show up. Eddie Van Halen was rumored to actually be in rehab at that point. The 2007 class only had artists inducted into the performers category, as no one met the criteria for any of the other categories. So, in that performers category, the Hall inducted the Ronettes, Patti Smith, Van Halen, REM, and this next group. Grandmaster Flash was born Joseph Robert Sadler on New Year's Day in 1958 in the Bronx, New York. As a young DJ, he worked the New York party scene back in the mid-1970s. He then started working with Mean Gene Livingston, Claudio Livingston, and Grand Wizard Theodore. Flash also had three other friends named Keef Cowboy, Melly Mel, and Kid Creole. They then brought in Scorpio and Raheem, and by the time the group shook out, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, as they were finally known as, consisted of Flash, Keef Cowboy, Melly Mel, Kid Creole, Scorpio, and Raheem, which is the lineup that was inducted into the Hall of Fame. The group came into rap when it was dominated by guys battle rapping and bragging, while doing it over disco, rock, James Brown, and Parliament Funkadelic beats. The group made its name in the underground scene by playing parties, especially in Queens and Brooklyn. Once Sugar Hill Records recording artist the Sugar Hill Gang made it big by sampling Chic's disco classic Good Times and turning it into their crossover smash hit Rapper's Delight, Grandmaster Flash knew it was time to get a record deal for themselves. As luck would have it, the same record label that propelled the Sugar Hill Gang to pop chart success ended up signing Grandmaster Flash. Grandmaster Flash had their first hit with Freedom in 1980, followed by Birthday Party and The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel. The group is known in the mainstream for two songs. Their song White Lines is a song about the drug trade that still gets sampled and or covered by other artists, most notably by Duran Duran on their album Thank You. However, it is Grandmaster Flash's classic song The Message that they are best known for. The song was one of the first records to talk about social issues affecting the community instead of bragging about their MC skills. While the group only released two albums, their place in music history and their influence is unmistakable. Their album, The Message, which is the one you want to get if you want to get your feet wet with them, is considered one of the greatest albums of all time, while the song, The Message, is considered one of the greatest songs of all time. The artists who the group have influenced include Public Enemy and KRS-One. As far as the group went, they broke up over royalty disputes in 1984 and then got back together in 1987 before finally breaking up permanently in 1990 after Keef Cowboy's death in 1989. If you're lucky, you can still, however, check out Grandmaster Flash. He spins vinyl at your local club, normally around the Bronx or even Upper Manhattan. Their induction in 2007 into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was not without controversy. There were, and still are, a lot of people, and voting members especially, who think that hip-hop has absolutely no place in the Hall of Fame. When you consider, though, that all forms of music have been influenced by another form of music, and that even hip-hop has gone on to influence rock music, think Limp Bizkit, Kid Rock, Korn, you get the idea. The argument then just becomes a really moot point. Once the dust had settled with that fact in 2007, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five became the first hip-hop group to be inducted into the Hall. I might add that these people who complain about hip-hop being inducted are the same people and voters who think that R&B groups like Earth, Wind & Fire don't deserve to be in. So really, what do they know? Inducted by 2021 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee Jay-Z, Grandmaster Flash, Keef Cowboy, Melly Mel, Kid Creole, Scorpio, and Raheem. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, class of 2007, and we will put a selection of their music onto this week's podcast playlist, the link to which is in the show notes. Before we go any further, we'd like to tell you that there is now a Music History in Depth podcast where we go more in depth on a few of the events that happened in music history for that particular week. The Music History in Depth podcast drops every Tuesday on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast from, as does our Music History Today podcast, which goes over the daily events in music history. The Music History Today podcast drops daily, including weekends, on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to this podcast. A while back, while looking at whether Motley Crue should be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I saw a quote that Motley Crue member Nikki Sixx said in an interview that he gave once. According to him, he was told that the band would never be inducted into the Hall because of their past behavior. That past behavior including an alleged drunk driving accident that claimed the life of another musician, plus alleged sexual and domestic assaults and abuses. It made me start to wonder, though, who else has been told that they will never make it into the Hall because of their past behavior? Sports Halls of Fame have had this issue for a while now. Sports Halls have kept players out because of past behavior, even though they clearly belong in the Halls. Pete Rose, for instance, was banned from baseball for gambling on games and is ineligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame, even though he still holds numerous records that have yet to be broken decades after he retired. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds probably won't ever get in because of their involvement in the baseball steroid scandal back in the 1990s. Then there are players and coaches who get into their halls, but then something happens after their induction. Probably the most famous example is the now late O.J. Simpson, who was inducted into the Football Hall of Fame some years before the infamous double murder trial and other issues that led him to enjoy a decade locked up in a cell at taxpayers' expense. Basketball coach Rick Pitino was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame a couple of years ago before numerous scandals temporarily ended his collegiate coaching career. Both men, however, were never thrown out of their respective halls. Music is a little different, I guess. I suppose to have this discussion, we'd have to define exactly what behavior would keep an artist out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, if Nikki Sixx is to be believed, then one reason would be past alleged sexual assault incidents. Okay, that's a good one to start with. Most halls also frown on drug use, so let's just throw that one in for good measure. I assume murder or attempted murder is included, so let's toss that one in. All right, we've got the sexual assaults and or abuses, we've got the drug use, we've got the obvious murder or even attempted murder. Now, with all that being said, and note that I did not throw in alcohol abuse, we'll just skip that one. Let's examine what we've got going here. Okay, Phil Spector was convicted of murder, so I guess he'd be out. Sexual charges would eliminate Michael Jackson, Chuck Berry, members of the Rolling Stones, and also Led Zeppelin, along with Elvis, who allegedly groomed Priscilla Presley from when she was in her teens, and also a host of other big names who have that little issue. If you threw in drugs as a criteria, you would literally eliminate 70% of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now then, where do we draw the line? Do we have two rules for inductees where if you're already in, you're not going to get thrown out? But if you're not in, then we're going to look at everything you've ever done and you better be clean. I'm not sure that that criteria is really fair, to be honest with you. It's not that a Hall of Fame hasn't ever thrown somebody out for extremely bad behavior. For instance, Bill Cosby was thrown out of the Television Hall of Fame once his past behavior came to light and became a court case, or 20 or 40 or 60, I think. In Australia, there's an artist named Rolf Harris. Rolf was a singer-songwriter and all-around entertainer. At one time, he was one of the most popular entertainers in Australia. His biggest hit was the novelty song Timey Kangaroo Down Sport, which went top 10 worldwide, including number 3 in America back in 1960. For his musical efforts, he was made a member of the Order of the British Empire, received numerous honorary degrees, and in 2008 he was inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame, which is the Australian Music Hall of Fame. Rolf's first troubles started in March of 2013 in a police investigation called Operation U-Tree. It targeted sexual crimes in the past. Rolf was arrested again in August of 2013 and was charged with 9 counts of indecent assault going all the way back to the 1980s, along with having photos of underage girls on his computer in 2012. Once he was convicted of some of the charges and sentenced to 5 years in prison, he not only had a lot of the honors given to him stripped away, but the ARIA Hall of Fame threw him out of their hall. To date, Rolf and Bill Cosby are the only people that I know of who have been thrown out of any Hall of Fame. I could be wrong on that, though, unless that petition to get Donald Trump's star removed from the Hollywood Walk of Fame actually succeeded. However, if there have been other artists who have been kicked out of a Hall of Fame, let me know in the comments section. I'd be curious as to who else has been stripped of a Hall of Fame membership. There's also the way that we as a society tend to forgive people for past transgressions an awful lot. This is, after all, the land of second chances. However, not everyone is afforded the blessing of being forgiven that way. Back to sports for a second. And since there have been some more public examples of this. Tiger Woods was accused of cheating on his wife multiple times. The sex, according to everyone involved, was consensual. There was no sexual assault. There was no rape. And yet, people always act like he raped every woman he ever met, even to this day. Kobe Bryant, on the other hand, was accused of rape, and while the criminal case was quietly dismissed when his accuser refused to testify in court, the civil case was not. Kobe later settled the case out of court and apologized to his accuser, and yet, Kobe is now officially in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and the rape allegations are barely mentioned, even in the hashtag MeToo movement era, especially now that he's been tragically killed in a helicopter accident. So, back to the basic premise. Is there a moral criteria for inducting someone into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? What exactly is it? And does that criteria also have to be met by people who are already in the hall as of right now? I honestly don't have all the answers. I'm just asking the questions. I wish I did have all the answers, but it seems that the hall voters have for now at least decided to apply the criteria to only new prospective inductees and to let the existing members stay in. Therefore, if you're going to put in some sort of a moral criteria, it should be all or nothing. Either everybody from the ones in it to the ones trying to get in it, or don't bother and let the musical merits speak for themselves. I vote for don't bother and let the musical merits speak for themselves. What do you think? Write me in the comments section. I'm rather curious on this one. This week's Spotlight Music Hall of Fame is the Grammy Museum and Hall of Fame in Los Angeles, California. There are actually three Grammy Museums now, with one in Newark, New Jersey, and the other in Cleveland, Mississippi, to go with the main one in L.A. The Recording Academy runs the museums, but has been inducting members into its Hall of Fame since 1974. The main Grammy Museum itself, with its Hall of Fame wing, opened in 2008 at L.A. Live, which is the downtown L.A. complex that has the former Staples Center, which is now called the Crypto.com Arena, because, boy, that rolls off the tongue like you wouldn't believe. Huh? Yeah, no. The museum has four floors, including a theater called the Clive Davis Theater, after the famed record executive and music guru. Some of the past exhibits there have paid tribute to, among others, John Lennon, Roy Orbison, Shakira, and also the world of hip-hop. Plus, they have ticketed evening discussions with artists such as Debbie Gibson, Madison Beer, and Lil Nas X. Ticket prices are normally $18 for adults, $15 for seniors and military members with ID, and $12 for college students with ID and kids 5 through 17. Children 4 and under and museum members are free. Its normal hours are Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and closed on Tuesdays. However, for all of that, check their website, GrammyMuseum.org, for updated hours of operation and pricing, as both seem to change with each season or event scheduled at their location. We'll put the link in the show notes for you in order for you to check them out. On May 13, 1971, Stevie Wonder turned 21, but something else happened that day. His contract with Motown Records expired. See, he had been under this Motown contract since the age of 11. Stevie Wonder, a child prodigy who mastered the harmonica at a very young age, first found fame as Little Stevie Wonder with the song Fingertips. He and his mother had signed 2 5-year contracts, during which Stevie was given a weekly stipend to cover expenses, and his royalties were held in a separate account until he was 21. It also meant that Stevie became part of the Motown assembly line at that point. He was told what to wear and what to sing. That meant that he also did not have any artistic freedom. So, once he turned 21 on that date, it not only meant that all his royalties became his, which made him a multimillionaire overnight, it also meant that his time for renewing his contract had come up. But instead of renewing his existing contract, he let it expire so he could negotiate a new contract. He got 2 things out of this extraordinarily large contract. The first was a much higher royalty rate than he was getting before. The second, and most important to him, was that he got more artistic freedom, as he wanted to write more songs that had social and political themes to them. This artistic freedom idea wasn't exactly new to Motown by that point. Marvin Gaye also won that right and would put out his classic album, What's Going On, around the same time period. That album is now considered by Rolling Stone magazine to be the greatest album ever made. This time would also mark a change for Motown, which normally put out albums that had only a few hit singles on them and a bunch of filler songs, as they like to say. Stevie started to use his newfound artistic freedom with the help of his soon-to-be longtime collaborators Robert Margoleff and Malcolm Cecil. The collaboration between the three men would produce what would be considered Stevie's classic album period. Their first result was the early 1972 album Music of My Mind, which was his 14th album, actually. Stevie immediately followed that album up with his 15th album, Talking Book. Talking Book utilized the use of synthesizers to add funk to his music and help synthesizers cross over into mainstream music, actually. Stevie also wanted this album to appeal to all audiences, not just R&B audiences, so he did something that at the time was considered rare. He toured with a rock group, specifically as the opening act for the Rolling Stones. The plan worked. When Talking Book was released on October 28, 1972, the album not only went to the top of the R&B charts, but it also went to number 3 on the pop albums chart. The album went on to be nominated for multiple Grammy Awards, where it received some competition, ironically, from Stevie's next album, which was released not too many months after Talking Book, called Inner Visions, which also became a big hit. Just before the recording of Talking Book began, Stevie found out that he had a great admirer, guitar legend Jeff Beck. Jeff and Stevie made a deal. Jeff would work on Talking Book with Stevie, and Stevie would write a song and let Jeff record it. That song was originally Superstition. Malcolm Cecil co-wrote the song with Stevie. Jeff was the one who came up with the drum shuffle intro to the song, with Stevie playing the drums on the song while Jeff played guitar on it. Superstition was recorded in 1972 at Electric Lady Studios in New York City. Robert Margalef did producing duties for that one. Stevie played the Owner Clavinet Model C to get that distinctive sound that the song has. He played the drums as well as the Moog synthesizer, with Steve Madeo on trumpet and Steve Lawrence on tenor sax. No background vocals were used on this track. Stevie was the only singer. It was a pretty straightforward song when you think about it. But when it came time to let Beck take the song, there were two problems. The first was that Beck's new album, which the song was going to go on, wasn't going to be released for months. That album, Beck, Bogert, and a Piece, was released in March of 1973. The second was that Motown Records thought that Superstition was going to be a big hit, so they told Stevie to put out his version of the song first. Stevie's version of Superstition came out as Talking Book's lead single on October 24, 1972, which was 4 days before the release of the album Talking Book. The radio version's running time was 4 minutes 7 seconds. The album's running time is 4 minutes 26 seconds. Beck's version came out months later. Stevie's version went to number one in America in July of 1973 and was the 26th biggest song of that year. It was Stevie's first number one single on the pop chart since Fingertips Part 2 in 1963. There have, of course, been other versions of the song other than Jeff Beck's. Stevie Ray Vaughan did a blistering live version of the song. There was a music video of Stevie Ray's version, complete with a cameo by Stevie himself at the very end of the video. Stevie Wonder's Superstition, from the album Talking Book, inducted into the Grammy Museum Hall of Fame in 1998. The Music Halls of Fame podcast is part of the Music History Today Network, which can be found under Music History Today on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and also on our YouTube page under Music History Today. Thank you very much for listening.